Hey guys, welcome back to Talking Shop. I'm Gray Sherrill, and with me, thankfully, is Jay Gillette.
Here I am.
And what we got on the table for these guys tonight, buddy?
Well, I thought we were going to be talking about the DC relaunch, but we were having a pretty good conversation on AIM about, you know, the futility of Marvel and like their Fox changes. So I feel like we could go off on that tangent, or we could talk about the DC relaunch.
Let's try and do both together, because, I mean, we were it kind of started with Superman, didn't it?
It did all start with Superman.
Everything starts with Superman. Like, apparently the DC Universe now. Well, I mean, let's just start with just the main issue is status quo.
It's all about status quo.
And, like, you know, Marvel, DC, they always try and change the status quo, but do they really find a whole lot of success in it?
Well, I think... I think the thing that came up in our conversation mostly, and I think that's sort of what the crux of this podcast is going to rest on, is the fact that the big... What? What just happened?
I moved something.
Okay, because I just heard, like, I swear I heard giggling.
No, that was you cracking, because I turned it was recording kind of quiet, so I turned up the speakers.
Okay. Are you going to edit this out? Can you edit this out?
We're going to leave this in for humor's sake.
Okay. All right, that's fine.
And because editing takes a lot of effort, sorry people, I have not mastered this crappy program called Audacity. If you have better suggestions, please email me. I really, really want them.
For next time, I will try and get an audio recorder, because I actually enjoy editing sound. It's something I don't mind doing at all.
I'm more of a video editor myself, so...
Okay. All right, but basically, the course of our conversation rested on the fact that sort of... The biggest difference between Marvel and DC is that, and we can see it more lately than I guess in the past, but lately it's like when you see a change at Marvel versus a change at DC, there's more of a sense of permanence in the change at DC than there is at the one at Marvel.
Even when you know that, like, the change isn't going to last, we knew Bruce was coming back. Like, there was no secret there. Bruce Wayne is Batman. He was coming back. But they didn't make Dick feel like a fill-in character.
No, they didn't.
But Marvel made Bucky feel like a fill-in character.
Well, yeah, Bucky was obviously... We all knew that by the time this Captain America movie rolled around that, like, Steve Rogers would be back to being Captain America. And, like, that was annoying, but in a way it's like, okay, fine, I can understand that. Actually, no. You know what? Fuck that. I'm gonna go off on a rant right here.
I don't understand that.
And here's why. Here's my issue with that.
Waiting for your issue with that.
Okay. It's sort of like, I've noticed, especially with Marvel, more so than DC. Well, usually more so Marvel, really, because they're the ones who, like, have their shit together in regards to the movie department. But whenever a Marvel movie rolls out, they always sort of change the status quo. Or just, like, they tweak costumes or origins or something like that in the comic related to that movie for whatever reason.
They really do. I think Daredevil's, like, the only one to escape it, and that's because Bendis was writing it at the time.
Well, they did give Bullseye that stupid forehead thing.
Oh, they did do that. But they never gave Daredevil the crappy leather, you know, I go to BDSM things costume from the movie.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, Marvel's whole idea is that, okay, Captain America movie is coming out, Steve Rogers isn't Captain America. Captain America movie is coming out, let's make Steve Rogers Captain America again. And to a certain extent, that idea makes sense.
You kind of have to do it.
Here's why I disagree with that. Because that's based a lot... on the idea that people are going to go see the Captain America movie, then they're going to go and seek out Captain America comic books, and that they'll be confused that the Captain America in the movie isn't the same one in the comics. And that makes sense. You don't want potential new customers, new readers, to be confused by what's happening in the books as regards to what's happening in the movie. But my question is, let's really be honest here. How many people do you think are going to see Captain America and be like, hey, I want to go read a Captain America comic?
I think number one issues cause a better sales spike than movies.
Yeah, no, definitely. I would love to see if there was any correlation between sales spikes and between sales spikes as related to movies.
Honestly, for looking at that, I think we should go look at Dark Knight, because for as successful as that was, there were no new Batman books launched to coincide with it.
Absolutely. No, you're right.
But if you look back, you know, Iron Man 1, Invincible Iron Man was out. I'm not sure what came out with Iron Man 2, but I think a new book was launched, but that could be a good one too. But Captain America number 1 drops next month to go with the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I bet Avengers is going to get relaunched next year to go with that too.
I wouldn't be surprised by that either, but to me it's like, that doesn't seem like a good... It's, in theory, that is a good marketing strategy. But that is a marketing strategy based on the fact that people are going to see this movie and want to buy the comic. And I think from everything I've ever experienced, like, that's simply not true.
I've never had more of an urge to go and read a book because of the movie.
Exactly. Like, I have a lot of friends who don't read comics. I think the only comic book movie I've ever seen that has inspired people to go read comics are V for Vendetta and Watchmen. That's it. Straight up.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Because I can't... And generally, they just want to go read the source material, and that's it.
Yeah. To me, it's like, I have friends who I went to see Iron Man with. And I have friends who know that I'm, like, a comic book guy. They know I love comic books. Not a single person is like, hey, what's the Iron Man comic like? After we saw Iron Man, like, they didn't give a damn. Like, it didn't matter to them. The movie was cool. That was as far as they wanted to take it.
That's how my friends are, too. I mean, my cousin had a period of time where he was reading whatever books I put in his house, but, like, he wasn't absorbing it. It was just something to do.
Yeah. And to me, it's like, I think Marvel, like, to me, I think it's kind of offensive to me that Marvel goes out of its way to appeal to a hypothetical demographic that doesn't ever really manifest itself.
And they build their whole universe around what's coming into theaters.
Yeah.
I mean, when Deadpool rolls out, I'm afraid for how many Deadpool books we'll have on the market then.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, we had 6 on the market that was like without having a movie.
Hell, let's go back even further than that. Do you remember before the Iron Man movie even started filming, when they were still trying to cast it?
Kinda.
Do you remember when the Iron Man book relaunched with Adi Granov and...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Notice how Tony Stark looks like Tom Cruise, because that's who they wanted to cast in the movie.
But he wouldn't do it because they wouldn't do that because he wanted the mask to be see-through so you could never, you know, not look at his face.
Exactly. And to me, it's like, even something as simple as, like, that cosmetic change, like making Tony Stark look like Tom Cruise, because Tom Cruise might maybe play Tony Stark in a movie, is ridiculous to me. Not that it really matters what Tony Stark is drawn to look like, but just sort of like that little pandering. It's just like, why are you doing that? Like, why, Marvel? Why is that a thing that you're doing?
One thing I like is that Xavier has never looked like Patrick Stewart. He's never been Patrick Stewart.
You're right. I actually... Hold on. Where is my copy of X-Men Legacy?
He doesn't look like Patrick Stewart too much. He looks like a bald guy.
He does just look like a bald guy.
He doesn't look like Patrick Stewart, I'll tell you that much.
No, he doesn't.
I mean, it's... You can carry the look over sometimes, but, like, the best way it's ever done is when they did Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury, and there was no Marvel movies with Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury. It was just, we want to make him look like Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, true.
Even though in Ultimate X-Men, when he debuted there, he was white.
Yeah, I remember that. but the Ultimate line is, like, a fucking mess. So, screw it.
Like, I'm kind of... As much as I hate the Ultimate line, I've spoken against it. Hickman and Spencer running it, I might check it out.
No. I'm mildly curious about the new Ultimate Spider-Man. Only about the new Ultimate Spider-Man just because, like, anytime a character changes costumes, like, I'm mildly interested in it. Otherwise, like, I don't care. Screw it. Ultimate line is terrible. Like, I don't want anything to do with any of those books at all.
Hickman and Spencer are kind of driving in because Hickman hasn't really turned into anything bad yet. And Spencer, for as bad as Iron Man 2.0 is, I want to like Ultimate X-Men again because that was my favorite Ultimate book. And Jeff Loeb ran into the ground, and Robert Kirkman. His run was really good when he read All at Once.
I'm trying to think when I stopped liking that book.
It was very easy to do at any given point in its run. You know what astonished me the most? When it ended, it had, like, the Heroes writers on it, and it didn't suck.
I know. There's nothing positive I have to say about Ultimate Line or the hypothetical future Ultimate Line written by Jonathan Hickman and whoever the hell. And Nick Spencer. Fuck Nick Spencer. Like, that's really how I feel.
I like Morning Glories, but he did blow his wad too early.
Like, oh, okay, no. Hate is too much of a strong word. Hate is a really strong word. I don't hate Nick Spencer. I dislike what Nick Spencer represents.
What does he represent?
To me, what Nick Spencer represents is, and we talked about this earlier, and to me it's just sort of like, okay, Nick Spencer is kind of like one of those, like, indie comic book darlings who all of a sudden sort of gain a lot of, like, mainstream attention with Marvel and DC. And, like, that's not a big deal. He started writing, like, Thunder Agents for DC.
Supergirl. Which is
sort of like one of those, like, which one of those books where it's like, I know that when he started writing Thunder Agents, he knew that shit was going to get canceled. Because I knew as soon as I saw a solicit for that book was going to get canceled.
How is it not canceled yet? Like, how is it running all the way until the relaunch?
I think at this point it might just be running until the relaunch, just because why the fuck not, you know? Because
Rebels got canceled.
Yeah, Rebels was a good book.
Like, Rebels was a great book, and it's just over.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
by the time Thunder Agents ends, it's going to have, like, what, like, 7-8 issues?
Maybe 9.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, to me, it's like, let a motherfucker have 9 issues. Like, that's not a big deal.
We screwed him out of Supergirl after 1 issue.
Yeah, they did, you know?
I still think that the reason why is they said, by the way, your run's only going to be 6 issues long, and then we're going in a new direction, and nothing you do matters. And he's like, Marvel's offered me Iron Man 2.0. They're like, you have fun with that.
My thing is, I think Marvel really only, like we talked about, Marvel only offered him that book. Just because it's like, they offered him that book and made him exclusive. Because, like, I think that was talent that were afraid of DC having. You know?
I imagine if he hadn't done the Marvel exclusive, he would have at least one of the relaunch books.
No. Yeah, he definitely would. He would definitely be writing.
He could be on Firestorm.
Don't say that. You not. He'd be writing something that was going to get canceled before it hit 12 issues. He would not be writing Firestorm.
He'd be writing Captain Atom.
Yes.
Oh, better yet, he could write Mr. Terrific. Maybe then the book might actually not suck.
Let me check.
Titans villain for hire writer. Eric Wallace.
Who the fuck is Eric Wallace?
Titans, Villains for Hire.
Wait, no, seriously?
Final Crisis, Inc.
Wait.
Yeah, that's him.
Seriously? That's the dude that's writing Captain... No.
Mr. Terrific. Captain Adam is Krull.
That's who that dude is? Because I was looking at his name and I'm just like, who the fuck is Eric Wallace?
Villains for Hire.
Oh my, that's... I feel... Like, Captain Atom isn't even a character I like, but, like, I feel bad for Captain Atom now.
Captain, he's got Krull.
I keep saying Captain and Mr. Now I feel bad. Mr. Terrific is a character I do like. Now I feel bad for Mr. Terrific. Why isn't Eric Wallace writing Captain Atom?
Why isn't Eric Wallace not writing anything because he sucks? You don't launch a book with the hopes that it fails. I mean, that's... Well, then again, I want you, Mr. Terrific, but...
No, you're right. And people listening, don't get me wrong. Like, personally, me, I don't have, like... I have no personal problem. I personally have no problems with any of these writers I mentioned. I don't know how you feel, Greg.
I have no problem with these guys. If I hate a writer, you'll know that I hate a writer, Alex Ross. But, the thing is, like, Eric Wallace, I have respect for the guy, but I just haven't liked any of his books yet. And I've had that problem with a lot of guys. And in a lot of cases... they've turned around on me. So, you know, maybe he will.
Like, despite all the shit I will sling at Nick Spencer, like, for me, Nick Spencer, for me, the thing with Nick Spencer is that, like, I read Forgetless, which is sort of like, is like 3-issue indie comic thing, and like, and it was entertaining for what it was. Was it brilliant? Not really. It's kind of like too grounded in, it's too much of a period piece, I think. And like, it's very much of like a strange period piece. Like, literally, it's a period piece set in like, It's set like last year.
That's not a period piece.
Huh?
That's not a period piece, but it's last year.
Read it.
I need to read it. I've only read Morning Glories by him, so...
Read Forgetless, and you will understand why it's a period piece, because it's like... it's not a period piece now, but anyone who reads Forgetless in 10 years, like, it's still a period piece.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying now.
That might be why I have such an issue with it, because it's, like, it's kind of way too connected to the way the world is right now. But, like, maybe when I'm, like, a grown-up, Forgetless will mean a lot more to me than it does now.
Have you ever seen Mission Hill?
That show?
Yeah, the show, Mission Hill.
Is that the show with the dudes with the blue hair?
Yes.
Yeah, I love that show.
That's a period piece.
Yeah, it is.
That's 1998 San Francisco, straight up. I love that show. Anybody listening hasn't heard of Mission Hill, you owe it to yourself. Check it out. Great show. So underrated. Adult Swim, they milked the hell out of it and still nobody watched it.
Yeah, Mission Hill is a great show. So I was like, I'll give an expense to that, like, maybe in a couple years when I read Forgetless again, I'll really like Forgetless. Morning Glories, he really pulled me in with, like, the first two issues. But then, like, sort of, like, I feel like he showed his hand a little too much. Kids started dying. Like, there's obviously, the evil plot seems a little too transparent to me. It's not like I can tell you exactly what's happening in it, you know what I mean? But, like, the way he described it was, like, Lost meets
the
Prophecy. I feel like someone described it that way. Maybe I'm wrong. Like, I mean, it's like, the issue with Lost was that, like, it took, like,
six seasons.
It took a bunch of seasons for you to realize that, like, okay, there's some shit happening in Lost. Like, I'm reading Morning Glories, like, I'm on issue 3, I'm like, okay, there's some shit happening here, like, I don't care about it.
Like, so, I read through the whole
Spencer, not your fault. Like, it just happened.
My problem with it, like, I read the whole thing in one sitting, I like the book, but it honestly feels like he's kind of rushing towards a conclusion.
Yeah, which is weird to me, because I feel like it's supposed to go on for a while, isn't it?
It feels like the book launched, and the premise makes it feel like it's going to be an ongoing, extended series, but the pacing he's giving the book makes you feel like it could just end at any random issue.
Yeah, it seems like a mini-series.
That drives you nuts when you're reading a book, and it's supposed to be an ongoing, and it feels like a mini.
Yeah.
Like, when you feel like at any given time, this book, or if it feels like it's a book that's on the chopping block, where every issue could be the last issue. Mm. I mean, honestly, as much as I love Spider-Girl, near the end, that's how the book felt. Because DeFalco was writing a book with knowledge that any issue could very well be his last.
I mean,
it's more painful with a book that you like than a book that you're just kind of getting in the groove for. But
I just don't want to go off on a tangent about Spider-Man.
I don't want to do it either. I'm just using it as an example of a book where every issue is being written like the last.
I don't
want to
offend a bunch of rabid Spider-Girl fans. Like, I have no interest in making those people mad at me.
You've done it before. Don't worry. They're not as rabid anymore. We've kind of been deflated by the Aranya girl crashing and burning so very, very hard.
Yeah, I know. And, like, I just noticed recently, like, via Twitter, like, once Gail Simone, I follow Gail Simone on Twitter, and once she's just like, yeah, Secret Six is getting canceled, like, I did not know there were so many people in the world that like fucking Secret Six.
Oh, I knew, but at the same time,
I'm
like,
not
I was
aware of that at all.
Like, I'm a huge fan of that book. I'm like, I had people bitching to me that it got canceled. I'm just like, you know what? I'm glad it lasted this long.
Yeah, Secret. I mean, I.
And like, I'm happy to see Gail move on to new properties and new books. And even though she's staying with Babs, it's Batgirl. But then she's moving to Firestorm as well. And it's like, I want to, as much as I love seeing Gail write the Birds of Prey. And write Secret Six, and write, you know, just the familiar, you know, Gail Simone characters. Mm. I want to see her stretch her freaking wings.
Well, I think
she's been typecast into the same kind of books for like the last 4 or 5 years.
My thing is that the Nick Spencer thing that we were talking about, that I had the thought that I didn't even get to finish yet.
Sorry.
No, it's not your fault. It absolutely connects to what you just said about Gail Simone. Because I think he sort of got, the way he sort of got, like, snatched up by Marvel, and he's just sort of getting, like, okay, now you write the War Machine book. Like, the fact that they're calling Iron Man 2.0 is stupid. Like, it's War Machine.
That'll make it sell a little bit better, let's be fair here.
It'll make the book sell a little better, but come on, like, it's fucking War Machine. Anybody buying that book is buying because they like War Machine.
Or because they're fooled by the name Iron Man 2.0.
I feel like that's probably, less than 5% of that book sales, you know, and I don't know how well that book was selling. Like,
it was probably about
selling enough to like make it the 12 issues.
I'd imagine it was 30% of the first issue sales. Like, I'm sorry, but when you have that, like, I bought the first issue, not like I knew better, mm-hmm. but at the same time, I'm like, you know what, Iron Man 2.0, that must make it a little bit more important. I'll give it an issue.
Yeah,
and then you know how they lost it after one issue. it wasn't the story which I actually liked. It was the use of three artists in one single, one normal sized issue. I mean, the first issue felt like it had a rushed art job. That killed the book for me.
I mean, I've been digging the book sort of, kind of, but, like, what really just killed it to me is, like, the fear itself tie-in.
The fear itself is, like, a fucking shitstorm.
Yeah, I'm like, don't just interrupt the storyline. Not every book needs to tie in the fucking fear itself. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it just doesn't have to be that way.
I mean, Secret Invasion was mainly done in miniseries form.
Yeah.
And that sucked. But something in fear itself sucks.
Yeah. But I think when it comes down to the idea of just, like, new blood and new ideas, I think it's sort of like both companies are definitely grasping at straws, right?
That actually segues back into our actual topic about status quo and just adapting to it and working with it and changing it around. And the fact
exactly.
That,
and I think both companies have, they both kind of have different ways of dealing with this. I feel like Marvel's way of dealing with this is, like, Marvel's done a really good job the last few years of getting their hands on some stellar fucking writers.
Well, Marvel's got one of the greatest bullpens in comics history, but the problem is that the way they run the company and the way they run their stories, nothing ever really changes for very long.
Yeah.
Like, nothing changes at Marvel. A big, giant status quo change, if it lasts 2 years, then it was a long one. Dark Reign lasted. Dark Avengers was what, like 16 or 17 issues.
Dark Avengers was like the worst thing ever.
It had its moments, but even that book, Bendis wrote like he didn't know what he was fucking doing. It wasn't paced. Like,
I mean,
it had no flow from issue to issue. When it ended, it dropped like it had so many subplots that were just randomly dropped.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's like I could go up on a whole Bendis tangent right now. There's a Bendis tangent I really could go off on, but, like...
We'll save it for tomorrow.
If Marvel really wants to shake things up, if Marvel wants to do anything different, give the Avengers book to someone else. That's it. Straight up. Just give Avengers to someone else. Give Avengers to Matt fucking Fraction. The fact that Matt Fraction doesn't write Avengers is mind-blowingly astonishing. It's astonishing to me.
Let Bendis write Thor and Fraction write Avengers. That way, if Thor sucks, I won't care because I still won't be reading it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't like Matt Fraction. Like, he's writing Thor, and Thor's been okay, but it's just like
I don't like it at all.
Yeah, I don't really care what the hell he's like. I love the art on Thor.
Oh, the thing is, he's had some great artists, but the writing just been, this isn't a Thor story. This is like a Silver Surfer story.
Yeah, to me, it's like he's like when he had Iron Man, like he stretched his wings off on Iron Man so well.
Like, he redefined the mythos, and like his run has been monumental. Like, he's made me a fan of Iron Man.
Yeah, and I think
I haven't liked Iron Man since Heroes Were Born.
Yeah, but I think the thing that he would do really well with Avengers, like, if you gave him an Avengers team, I think the thing Fraction would do with Avengers...
He would do what he did with X-Men.
What?
He would do what he did with X-Men. He would make every character important.
No, what I think he would do with Avengers, because I feel like the issue with Thor is that just, like, the kind of story he's telling just doesn't really work with Thor, but I feel like with Avengers, he would shake the team up. He would assemble a team that would work with the story he wants to tell.
He would kind of shuffle it around a little bit. Like, he wouldn't marry himself to, this is my roster.
Exactly. And, you know, it's like, but with Bendis and the Avengers books, it's just sort of like, to me, it's like, I've honestly reached the point where it's just like, fuck New Avengers. Like, I don't, like, I love Luke, like, Luke Cage has been the thing that's kept me reading New Avengers for so long, and it's reached the point where it's like, I don't care anymore. I don't care what's happening with Luke and Jessica and their baby. Like, those are the things that made me care about New Avengers, and I don't care anymore.
The book has just been... This arc especially has been bad. Like, Mike Deodato, love his art. Why is he on this book? Howard Chaykin, why is he doing something mainstream? The Avengers, why were they formed by Nick Fury in the 50s?
I don't know.
And Mockingbird, why does she have a combination Super Soldier Serum Infinity formula in her veins now? What the hell are you doing, Bendis? And how long until you personally forget that you are doing it and we go back to the previous status quo?
I don't know. I don't know. And it's like... And things like that that Bendis does make me mad. Those things make me mad. But then it's like, but then have you read like the last, I think it wasn't even the last two issues. Did you read the most recent issue of like Avengers, the Fear Itself tie-in?
I love the Bachelot art, but at the same time, the book, here's the problem with Bendis and his books, and we're going to have the same books as Bendis tangent for a later date, but he plays favorites, and that's not always a bad thing, but... if the last issue of Avengers, it had a lot of Spider-Woman, which, you know, it was nice to see her well-drawn by Bacciolo, and actually get some characterization instead of being a background character like she'd been for the first, you know, two arcs. But then all she does is be like, I want to be with Hawkeye, I want to be with Hawkeye. And then you already know they're getting together because of the future cover, so for some reason Hawkeye's not with Mockingbird, so he's going to get with Spider-Woman, because Bendis has a crush on Spider-Woman, and he's like, she's going to get with the best Avenger.
To me, it's just like, I think there has to come a point where it's like, every character is someone's favorite character. And I think sometimes we forget that there are characters that are writers' favorite characters too. And it's like, there comes a point where it's like, that writer needs to just step the fuck back and realize that, like, no one wants to read your fan fiction.
The thing is, like, you know, as much as I love Booster Gold and Kyle Rayner, if I was writing comics professionally, those are the two characters I would not ever want to put my pencil to.
No, dude, I would never... I know you love Kyle Rayner. I would never want to read a Kyle Rayner comic you wrote. Like, I couldn't do it.
I mean, I would make too much man love.
Yeah, like, me, like, I love me some Batman, but, like, I could never write a Batman story. Like, it just would not be a thing that anyone else in the world could deal with. Straight up. It would just be terrible.
It would just be fan service. And, like, the thing is, like, you need to write a character that you like, but you don't love.
You know what?
Like, you need to grow to love the character while writing them.
I was reading No Reservations by Anthony Bourdain, and he has a really great section in his book where he talks about how he doesn't like chefs who consider themselves artists.
Well, they're chefs.
Well, yes, there's that. But he doesn't. He considers cooking a craft, not an art.
I do too.
Yeah, and his whole thing is that there are two different kinds of cooks. There are people who cook to show off the craftsmanship of it. And then there are people who cook or, like, just create in general, and whatever they're creating, like, they're sort of only doing it to give themselves a hard-on.
I hate people like that.
Yeah. Because it's like, that's no good to anybody. It's really not good to anybody.
I mean,
I feel like I see a lot of things that are happening in the Marvel Universe that are sort of like that, that are sort of just, like, Bendis-driven hard-ons, straight up.
DC's been guilty of some of those too, and like I'll say Hal and Barry straight up. I will not deny that, and I'm the DC fanboy. But at the same time, like, I'll say this: you know, this is going back to what we were talking about earlier, you know, on AIM before this whole thing started. But you know, DC brought back Hal and Barry. You know, Wally and Kyle get pushed to the background, but Wally had a run of like 23 years as the Flash, and not the other Flash. And Kyle was Green Lantern for, like, 12 or 13 years before Hal came back. Mm-hmm. These guys, you know, DC didn't just, you know, give them a chance, watch it fail, and, you know, throw in the old guys. These guys had good long runs. And then they decided we're going to go a different direction creatively because we want to see if we can't bolster sales.
Well, that's part of the reason why I'm sort of a fan of this relaunch that they're doing. Because to me, it's like, my entire comics reading life, Wally West and Kyle Rayner were the Flash and Green Lantern.
Me too.
So it's like seeing Hal Jordan and Barry Allen do it, it's just like, yeah, it's these older characters that used to exist doing it, but then to me, it's sort of like, no, these are new guys in these mantles, you know? These are new characters doing it. Like, my entire comics reading life, like for the longest time, Cassandra Cain was Batgirl to me. And, like, I've just gotten used to the idea that Stephanie Brown is Batgirl.
I read Cassa series, but I liked it, but thanks to people like, Seth, I kind of didn't care too much after a while, because when you have somebody who loves it too much, it kind of takes the fun out.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, Steph, like, I started reading that book because I'm like, you know what, I knew Miller from, like, his three issues of Titans where he killed Kid Devil, and... He wrote those three issues. That was
him. Because Kid Devil sucked.
I loved Kid Devil.
Dude, honestly, like...
He was the best character who was just used so horribly. He was so much fun. Like, he was the nice guy on the team, despite that he was a demon.
No lie, dude. Besides, no lie, like, Kid Devil dying is probably the best thing that happened in that Titans book since it was launched, period.
No, I like John's up until 1 year later was just fine.
No, I completely disagree. I hated watching him shit on everything that had happened in Young Justice.
See, here's another thing. Why, you know, I took my big gap from comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I talked about it on the side bunch, and I told you over the years, I quit reading Young Justice when I quit reading comics, and the last issue I got was a crossover with Supergirl.
That crossover was so bad.
And it was, like, issue, like, 12 or 13. Like, it was, like, issue 13 or 14, probably, because I know that Red Tornado had his whole issue already.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I came back to comics, I bought the last issue of Young Justice, which had just come out.
Mm-hmm.
So I literally missed Young Justice. So DC not having a trade policy for Young Justice, then, in the meantime, now, possibly ever, Teen Titans was my fresh start.
Mm-hmm.
And it, to me, worked just fine because I didn't like Impulse. Like, I never really read Impulse, but, like, so I never really cared. He was just that kid version of Flash that wasn't Kid Flash. I mean, like, everybody's got their characters that are theirs, and it's all about when you read. You know, like, I never, like, even though I grew up with Superboy, the leather jacket cut, and the spandex and all that, and I'll have friends who will kill me for this, I like the t-shirt and jeans look better than anything he's ever worn.
I will disagree with you. And
he looks like less of a tool.
The costume he wore at the end of Young Justice was a fucking tits.
That wasn't bad, but if you think about that original 90s costume, for as cool as it was at the time, which, you know, it was different for me and you because I'm like 7 years older than you, but that costume, looking at it now, he looks like a tool with his leather jacket and his earring and his buzzed off sides.
Yeah, when that came out, I was like mad young, so it's like I wasn't even like in the comics then, but like I can't imagine anyone thought that was cool.
I was like 8 or 9, and it was freaking awesome.
Well, you were 8 or 9.
I mean, it came out like 94, 93, 94.
I'm sure there were 16-year-old comic book readers who were just like, that's fucking stupid.
Actually, I bet they were like it. That was the look at the time.
That's true, isn't it?
But that was the thing, is he was kind of based to be like what teenagers thought was cool at the time. So, I mean, I don't know what they thought was cool because, again, I was like 7 or 8 or 9, but...
Yeah.
So... Yeah, but, like, you know, that's one thing I'll give credit to DC for is when they put in a status quo change, they make it matter. Bruce Wayne, like, I don't know if you talked about this in here yet or not, but when they got rid of Bruce, everybody and their mother knew Bruce Wayne's not dead. Bruce Wayne's coming back. Bruce Wayne is Batman. Bruce Wayne will be Batman again. There was no delusion to that fact.
Mm-hmm.
And yet... For, what was it, 18 issues of Batman and Robin,
mm-hmm.
we had Dick Grayson as Batman, and, you know, we had probably about almost 2 years of Dick Grayson as Batman before Bruce came back. And even though we knew this is temporary, we never had that Bucky effect of, can we just get Steve back?
Yeah.
Because the difference there is that when you're reading that, Dick Grayson was Batman, and every writer who used him treated him like he was Batman. He was not filling in for Bruce. He was Batman. But you read Captain America, and Bucky was cool in the beginning as Cap, and like he was kind of becoming his own man. But the second Steve came back, it was just, he's filling time until Steve takes back the mantle.
I think the most telling thing about that was, I forget what book I was reading, and I might have been New Avengers. It was something. And like one of the characters referred to Bucky Cap as Bucky Cap.
I think that was Avengers.
Yeah, I think it was Avengers 2. And, like, yes...
That cracked me up, but that's not something you want to mention in your book.
Yeah, it's funny and a nice little tongue-in-cheek thing, but to me it just sort of, like...
It killed the character on the spot.
It did. It absolutely did.
It neutered him.
I wrote a comic script for one of my assignments in a creative writing class. And sort of, like, the whole point of the story that I wrote was that... Like, the whole point of the story that I wrote was basically just, like... It was sort of about the lack of respect I feel that's sort of shown in the comic industry now towards characters in general. Like, every character deserves to be respected. To me, it's like, don't make Bucky Captain America when Steve Rogers dies. So, if that when Steve Rogers comes back and you keep Bucky as Cap, characters are going to call him Bucky Cap. Like, that's not a cool thing to do. That's not fair.
Bucky Cap works when, like, I say it, or you say it, or a message board person says it, or, you know, a fan says it, or even a writer says it in an interview. But the second it becomes an in-character reference, that's jumping the shark on the whole concept and letting you know that they're not taking it seriously from him character perspective because he's Bucky Cap.
Exactly. To me, that would have been like, when they like form their new clusterfuck of a Justice League that thankfully is not going to exist anymore. If like Starman had been like, "Yo, Nightwing," like, "Yo, Nightwing, what's up?" It's like, no, he's not Nightwing. He's Batman. Wearing the Batman costume, that's who he is. He's Batman. Bucky Cap is not Bucky Cap. He is Captain America. I mean, like, I'm pretty sure it was Spider-Man that called him that, too. And it's like, first of all, Bucky's older than you, dude. Bucky fought in World War II. Show him some fucking respect. Like, he fought Nazis.
He's got a bionic arm because he lost his first one fighting for our country.
Exactly.
Would you ever lose your marriage?
Put the respect on that ground. God damn it.
What
like,
is
not fucking sense.
Hey, what has Spider-Man ever lost? A clone, a daughter that never existed, and a marriage that never happened. And an uncle who... Well, he lost an uncle.
He lost his girlfriend's virginity to his archenemy.
That got retconned.
No, dude, that still happened.
Oh, yeah, it did. The kid showed up, didn't he? He was in that...
He showed up in that stupid miniseries.
And he could wear the American Sun armor because he was an Osborn.
Yeah, I honestly don't know why like someone thought that was a good idea to write that story.
They could have just not done it. We could have all forgotten.
Yeah. But it's like, in regards to the status quo thing, it's just that, like, I've been so... Like, you remember, like, for the longest time, like, I was shitting on Spider-Man. Like, I hated Spider-Man for so long.
All did.
Yeah, everyone hated Spider-Man. But, like, I still read it. But it's like, I didn't. Oh, Spider-Man. Spider-Man's fucking amazing. But, like, I just keep waiting for, like, when is the other shoe going to drop on Spider-Man? When is Peter Parker going to lose his fancy job? When is Carly going to break up with his ass? When is he going to have to move out of that sweet-ass penthouse? Like, when's Peter Parker's life going to be shitty again? When's he going to wind up working at some stupid newspaper?
And when's he going to try and get back with Mary Jane?
What?
And when's he going to try and get back with Mary Jane?
I'm actually surprised it hasn't happened. It's going to happen soon enough. Like, I would not be surprised if, by the end of the year, Spider-Man and Mary Jane...
Like, honestly, that's the biggest status quo change that Marvel is committed to since No More Mutants. The Registration Act, look at that one, Civil War. This is the first example of Marvel in the past couple of years that really stands out to me. Civil War, the whole deal was, you know, there's registration, superhumans need to be held accountable for their actions and all the things that they do, you got to sign a dotted line, work for your country, and there's a war, and... New Avengers is Luke Cage and his Outlaw Avengers, and Mighty Avengers is a horribly written book with horribly overused thought bubbles of crap. Yeah. Where Ms. Marvel leads a team and they fight supervillains, and they're not really supervillains, they're really the New Avengers with Venom symbiotes. Mm-hmm. And then Doctor Doom back in time for no apparent reason.
The more you talk about it, just please stop.
Like, I mean, the book I'd go and Dan Slott took it over after Secret Invasion.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have all this, but at no point in time did you ever feel like this was ever going to last.
No.
And it didn't last. And then how'd they break it? They brought Skrulls in, and then Norman Osborn took over. And at no point did you ever feel like Storm and Norman Osborn, his dark reign, would ever last more than 2 years. Yeah. I was actually amazed when it lasted more than 1 year.
Yeah. Looking at things from certain in-story perspectives, like, the abolition of, like, the Registration Act and like Kemp Hammond and fucking like all those initiative teams, like, to me that was retarded. Like, that was the best thing that came out of Civil War.
It really was. Like, the initiative was the best book coming out of Civil War,
That was the best Avengers book, period.
Yeah.
That was the best Avengers book.
And you know what the funny thing is? The best Avengers book right now is Avengers Academy.
I mean,
New Avengers cracked in the hat with this arc.
You're right that Avengers Academy, that's like beating two cripples in a race.
Hey, Avengers Academy, I usually put on a 7-8 scale. Like, I like that book on a consistent base. Like, it has not had a really bad issue in my eyes yet. But Avengers and New Avengers and that crap hole known as Secret Avengers.
The worst book. The thing that makes me mad about that book is that, like, I want to like that book so bad because, like, when the team for that book was announced, I was just like, yes, this is a team of Avengers I want to see.
And
it's like, the more I read it, it's like, no, this is not a team of Avengers I want to read about.
And the worst part is, like, It's a big part of it. I've been telling you this before. I've been saying that as well. Brubaker's burned out.
You think that's it?
He's completely burned out. When is the last time you read something that was not one of his... Alan Reed is creator-owned stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that's still good because it's still getting critical acclaim. But Captain America has been flat since Reborn. Secret Avengers sucked from day one. And he just hasn't really been that same explosive, like, I write Captain America and it's great Brubaker. Or if you can skip Deadly Genesis, his Uncanny X-Men was actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you skip Deadly Genesis.
I mean...
And that was the editorial-written story, because they all have editorial-written stories.
I mean, I like Deadly Genesis because I like Vulcan. I might be the only person who actually likes that character.
I liked him in Rise and Fall of the Shi'ar Empire, and I liked him in, War of Kings.
Yeah.
I didn't like War of Kings, but I liked him in it.
I also liked that Banshee died.
I can live without Banshee. I can agree with you on this.
Well, not that I love Banshee. Not that I could live without Banshee.
I like that he stayed dead.
Well, yeah, no, that's what I like. I like that, like, when Banshee died, I'm like, yeah, Banshee's not coming back from the dead.
Yeah, like I love that Marvel actually commits to a character death for a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, like I don't see Nightcrawler coming back.
You know what I see happening?
What?
Are you reading X-Force?
Yeah, I actually have the exact same thought I know that you have right now.
The Age of Apocalypse Nightcrawler is coming back with them. Mm-hmm. You know what? That would make the book a million times better, and it's already pretty freaking awesome.
That would...
Having a killer Nightcrawler on the team.
I think, to me, that would make the team a million times better, but, like, to me, it's just, like, that would just be, like, one too many... Like, I feel like the X-Universe, like, the X-Men universe was doing so well for so long, and I feel like all those books are still written really well, but just, like, too many things are happening in the X-Men universe right now.
They need to slim it down a little bit. Like, Objectiveless X-Men, Gishler sucked, vampires are pointless... And what the hell is Chris Yost's first to last?
Mm.
Actually, also one thing about vampires. You know, out of all, like, the fringe kind of lower-tier writers, I'm a big fan of Marjorie Liu.
Oh, yeah, I love Marjorie Liu. She's good.
X-23 is a great book. It's one of the best X books in the market, and nobody reads it, to my knowledge.
Yeah, no, it's very entertaining. Like, I'm surprised. Like,
and Vampire Jubilee works in that book.
What's surprising is I feel like more people read the Ken book, and that book sucks.
I'm actually kind of interested about this new creative team, but this is another one of those examples of Marvel being like, here's a guy, eat him. Rob Williams. He's taking over like 6 books this month.
Mm-hmm.
Who the fuck is Rob Williams?
I couldn't tell you.
Well, apparently he's going to be writing about 6 books this month between Fear Itself miniseries, Fear Itself one-shots, and Dark Wolverine.
Honestly, he can write those miniseries, and he can write his soon-to-be-canceled Dark Wolverine. It's like, that's his business. I'm not going to hate on his game. Like, if Marvel called me up right now, and they were just like, yo, Jules, do you want to write a Great Lakes Avengers ongoing? I'd be like, I mean, I know I'm not going to write that for more than 5 issues, but okay. Like, I'd do it. Like, it's not a thing I'll tell them no about.
Oh, I'm the same way. If somebody called me up and offered me a book they knew would last 4 issues, I'd take the paycheck.
I think the only way I wouldn't do it is if just, like, the character or concept of the book offended. You know?
If the character was what?
If the character or concept offended.
I would still do that if they paid me enough money. I'm a whore. I would do that.
No, to me, it was like, yo, Jules, want to write Deadpool? I'd be like, no, I don't. Like, I'm not going to do that.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't do Deadpool.
Like, I'm not going to write that. Like, I wouldn't write Deadpool. I wouldn't write...
Wolverine.
No, I'd write Wolverine.
I wouldn't
write Gambit.
I would get annoyed with his accent and drop it after 6 pages with no explanation whatsoever. I will own this right now. I would drop his accent after 6 pages.
I would drop it just because I wouldn't want to keep writing it. Like, I would write that accent if, like, I could just write it in English and then, like, someone else would put it in Cajun.
Okay, fun fact, and no one's going to get this, but you're going to get a laugh out of it. If I could reboot any character to my choice, I would take Nate Gray, reboot him, and make him Shaman. You like that? Sorry, folks. This is an inside joke for a couple of our friends, but needless to say, Shaman is a telepathic stoner.
Yeah. Oh.
And he's an asshole. And you know what? He's ridiculously entertaining in the right mindset. You don't need to know where he's from. You're better off that way. Anyway, status quo changes.
No, but it's good that you mentioned the Nate. It's actually good that you mentioned Nate Gray. Because that's kind of what I'm talking about with, like, the X-Men universe. Like, I feel like that universe is status quo. I feel like too many things are happening in X-Men right now. Like, number one, there are new mutants popping up all over the world. Okay, that's fine. New mutants are popping up all over the world. I can handle that. Oh, X-Force is going to the Age of Apocalypse? Okay, fine. X-Force can go to the Age of Apocalypse. Oh, what's this? Like, the Starjammers are all dead? And Rachel Gray is, like, being held captive in, like, a galaxy that's about to fall into the sun?
And the Break World is living with us and trying to kill us in our sleep?
Oh, there's that, too. Oh, what, Schism? There's a schism now, another team is going to split into.
And don't forget about Legacy, where, Legion's alternate personalities broke free and are now causing havoc elsewhere in the world.
Yeah, like, there's...
That's actually the most awesome X-Book right now, I'll tell you what. I love Legacy.
It's real good, but, like, there's just like, so much shit.
It's a solid book on the market.
There's so much shit happening in the X-Men universe right now. Like, to me, and, like, the most ridiculous part of it is...
And Wolverine's getting revenge because his people sent him to hell.
Yeah, no, that's actually really stupid.
Like, I love that. That book is actually really fun, and it's cool, but I read it, and I'm like, you know what would make this book even better? If it made sense with any other Wolverine characterizations going on right now, because no other book, as he mentioned, that he's pissed off because people killed him and put a demon in him.
Well, to me, it's like, my thing about that is, when it comes to characterization, like, I understand that, like, Wolverine's pissed off about that. I guess I'm thinking about it far too reasonably. But it's just like, I feel like Wolverine's one of those characters that's like, he's characterized so wobbly. Like, to me, the fact that there's supposed to be this schism happening, I mean, like, the fact that Wolverine's concerned about the future of mutant kind, number one, is retarded to me. Because that doesn't seem like something Wolverine would give a fuck about.
If Wolverine's leading his own team of X-Men, does that mean he can leave the Avengers and not lead X-Force?
I don't know.
Because, I mean, can he really do two teams of Avengers, X-Force, and have his own team of X-Men?
The fact that Wolverine and Spider-Man are both on two teams of Avengers is of constant annoyance to me.
Spider-Man, I can explain for one reason and one reason alone that Wolverine doesn't have.
Well, Spider-Man lives in New York.
Spider-Man lives in New York. Wolverine has to commute between San Francisco and New York.
Spider-Man lives in New York, and that's perfectly fine. But my thing is just, like, there are plenty of other good characters, not just in Marvel New York, but in the Marvel Universe in general, that can take up one of those team spaces. You know what I mean?
Honestly, leave Spidey on New Avengers, give off a big Avengers, because you know what? He's not an A-list superhero. He's an A-list name, but he's not an A-list hero as far as, you know... He does not fight Avengers-level threats. He fights New Avengers-level threats. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean...
Like, I don't want to see him fight Kang. I want to see him fight the Wrecking Crew.
I agree with you there on that point, but I think it's funny because that just makes me think of, like, the vampire slug thing. And to me, it's like the whole vampire arc that the X-Men went through, as far as I'm concerned, the only reason that vampire arc happened was so that Jubilee could become a vampire.
It's Twilight, and the thing is, for as you know, as much as Marvel's pushing it, isn't the last Twilight movie out next year?
Yeah.
What are you going to bet that by the time that movie's out of theaters, it's over? Or what do you want to bet it goes before, it even ends before that? Because how long is Vampire Jubilee really going to last?
Dude, I refuse to believe that anyone was sitting around at the Marvel offices going like, yo, vampires are really popular right now. Let's do a vampire story. Like, I don't want to believe that that's the mindset they were in. Because if that's really how Marvel Comics is run, then I don't want to read any Marvel Comics.
They're owned by Disney.
Yeah, yes, they're owned by... I mean, I don't know how much... I don't know. Is Mike... Who's the dude that runs Disney? What was that guy's name? The robot.
I have no idea.
Yeah, like Michael Eisner. What's his name, Michael Eisner?
Oh, yeah, the guy that family I always mocked.
Yeah.
I don't think he owns them anymore.
Yeah, neither do I. I have no idea who runs Disney.
I don't care. It's Disney. Yeah, they put a bunch of PG and G movies they don't watch.
Which is like, I really feel like the vampire arc only happened so that Jubilee could become a vampire, so that Jubilee could be a useful character.
She could really be Wonder Bra.
Because that's what I like about X-Men. Like, every character on that stupid island that they live on is useful in some way, except for Jubilee. And now she's a vampire, so she's kind of useful now.
That's why she wouldn't live on the island at first either. You remember she was refusing to live on the island because she didn't have powers?
Yeah.
And nobody cared?
Yeah, of course. punch somebody, it's because it's fucking Jubilee. Who cares?
Okay, here's a good status quo thing that Marvel didn't stick to. When they randomly turned Chamber back to normal for no apparent reason, except for the fact that now everybody's happy again because he doesn't look like Apocalypse with sound powers.
When did they change Chamber? When did they change
At the end of Age of X. They came back and Revenant and, you know, Rachel was there and Chamber's like, oh, bloody hell, and he's back to normal.
Oh, yeah.
That was the best thing about it, because, like, oh, yay, now Chamber can be Chamber again and not Mini-Apocalypse.
But, I mean, who gives a fuck about Chamber?
Hey, I read Generation X.
Yes, I'm sure you read Generation X. I'm sure you loved it very much. But, like, hey, you...
Why do you think I want to see Scott Lobdell on Teen Titans so much?
What?
Why do you think I'm so excited to see, you know, Scott Lobdell over at DC right now? He's doing Teen Titans and Red Hood and Superboy. It's like, if that's the kind of voice he brings, sign me up for some Scotty Lobdell.
I mean, you and the five other people who like Chamber can go ahead and be excited about that. And you and the five other people who don't think that Red Hood book isn't going to get canceled after six issues can also be excited about that, too.
Hey, I didn't make a six-issue list. I made books be canceled by the fourth issue. It won't last, but I would like to see Jason Todd kind of thrive.
Well, part of me thinks at this point we should actually talk about these DC relaunch books.
We probably should, or at least get into a couple of them.
I mean, honestly, like, let's just... You know, it'll be fun. Let's just talk about the books that are going to be canceled.